everyone. My name is Izzy and welcome to my Izzy Journey to Occupational Therapy. And today I will be discussing about motor control theory. What motor control theory, the concepts, facts, and premises of it, and how can we compare and contrast one theory from the other theory, and I will give some examples or details that are relevant to OT practice. Alright, so let's start on defining motor control theory. Motor control theory is the ability to regulate or direct the mechanism essential to movement. It addresses questions such as how does the central nervous system organize to many individual muscles and joints into coordinated functional movements, and how is sensory information from the environment and the body used to select and control movement, and how do perceptions of ourselves, the tasks we perform and the environment in which we are moving influence our movement behavior. Now we know what is motor control. Let us talk about what is the theory of motor control. If we say theory of motor control, it describes viewpoints regarding how movement is controlled. It is a group of abstract ideas that control movements. And if we say abstract ideas, it means it has different ideas and different opinions. Different ideas about key principles that allows us to understand how functional movements are organized, and different opinions about relative functions and relative importance of these principles. Okay, without further ado, let's go straight of what are those motor control theory. Today I'm going to discuss four motor control theory. The first is reflex motor theory. The second is hierarchical motor theory. Next is the system motor theory, and last is motor program theory. Now let us first discuss about reflex motor theory. Mr. Charles Sherrington, a neurophysiologist in the late 1800s, he believed that complex behavior could be explained through the combined actions of individual reflexes that were chained together. He viewed the central nervous system as a black box in which a specific sensory input would elicit reflex or stereotype motor output. The sensory feedback from the motor output could trigger the other reflexes or stereotype model. This model suggests that human movement was a summation or combination of reflexes. Example: a therapist using sensory input to elicit a motor output is the use of vibration or tapping over the tricep muscle to elicit elbow extension. Mr. Sherrington says that reflexes are the building blocks of complex behavior, and if we say a complex behavior, it means organization of reflexes that become variously associated with one another and or with the environment contingencies. This reflex theory of motor control has a number of limitations. First, the reflex cannot be considered the basic unit of behavior if both spontaneous and voluntary movements are recognized as acceptable class of behavior, because the reflex must be activated by an outside agent. Second is, the reflex theory of motor control does not adequately explain and predict movements that occurs in the absence of sensory stimulus. More recently, It has been shown that animals can move in a relative coordinated fashion in the absence of sensory input. Third is the reflex theory does not explain fast movement. That is sequence of movement that occurs too rapidly to allow for sensory feedback from the preceding movements to trigger the next. For example, an experienced and proficient typist moves from one key to the next so rapidly that there is no time for sensory information from one key stroke to activate the next. Fourth, the concept that a chain of reflexes can create complex behavior fails to explain the fact that a single stimulus can result in varying responses depending on context and descending commands. For example, there are times when we need to override reflexes to achieve goal. Thus, normally touching something hot results in the reflexive withdrawal of the hand. However, if our child is in fire, we may override the reflexive withdrawal in order to pull the child from the fire. Finally, reflex chaining does not explain the ability to produce novel movement. Novel movements put together unique combination of stimuli and responses accordingly to rules previously learned. A violinist who has learned a piece on the violin and also knows the technique of playing the cello can play the piece on the cello without necessarily having practiced it on the cello. The violinist has learned the rules for playing the piece and has applied them to a novel situation. So, how a reflex theory of motor control be used to interpret a patient behavior and serve as a guide for the therapist's action. If we chain or compound the reflexes that are the basis for functional movement, clinical strategies designed to test reflexes should allow the therapist to predict functions. In addition, a patient movement behavior would be interpreted in terms of the presence or absence of controlling reflexes. Last is retraining motor control for functional skills would focus on enhancing or reducing the effect of various reflexes during motor tasks. So what is the clinical implication of this? In the context of assessment movement, behavior is interpreted in terms of the presence or absence of controlling reflexes. Example of this is a test for normal and abnormal reflexes. From this perspective, a variable packet of assessment occur. And if we look at the context of treatment, we can focus on enhancing or reducing the effect of various reflexes during motor tests. So we can appropriately modify or what are we giving to do with these reflexes. So, as I mentioned before, as part of Sherrington reflex theory about the stimulus, how the stimulus break a particular reflexes response can be various and very specific to a very particular situation. Because of this, an important issue to consider when working with the reflexes is whether a stimulus is being provided in the clinic or has the same characteristic in a natural occurs stimulus. So the second motor control theory is hierarchical theory. If we say hierarchical theory, it means it has a control. Hierarchical control in general has been defined as an organizational control. That is top down. That is, each successively higher level controls over the level below. In strict vertical hierarchy, lines of control do not cross and there is never bottom up control. So what does it mean about? The highest level of the nervous system control the middle level, and the middle level control the lowest level. This is similar to the hierarchical structure of many businesses, in which the directives go from the president to the vice president to the middle managers and finally to the workers. Rodolphe Magne says that reflexes controlled by lower levels of neural hierarchy are present only when cortical centers are damaged. It means that reflexes are part of hierarchy of motor control, in which the higher centers normally inhibit these lower reflex centers. Hierarchical model of motor control theory such as that the control of movement originates centrally with executive selecting, planning, and initiating of motor program to respond to specific input. The motor program contains the instruction for the effector, which carries them out without possibility of modification if something goes wrong. The output is the movement that can be observed in the clients with normal central nervous system functions. The higher level control, the higher level control, the lower level. However, if the client has central nervous system dysfunction, it becomes different. The loss of higher level voluntarily control results the release of lower level reflexes. That is why primitive reflexes, spasticity, and abnormal movement patterns dominate movement control. The hierarchical model incorporates an open loop system of control rather than a closed loop system. An open loop sends pre-programmed instructions to an effector that does not use feedback to carry the movement. There is a feed-forward or anticipatory control in the hierarchical theory. So it means that it is used for rapid movements because there is insufficient time for a sensory feedback to influence the outcome of the movement. So this information sent ahead to the prepare the system for sensory feedback and for the future further command. Example is when a person is standing, the arm raises automatically. The center of gravity shifts. This postural adjustment must occur before the movement is initiated in order to maintain balance. Many postural adjustments that were thought to be that equilibrium reaction in response to sensory input have been shown to be anticipatory adjustment prior to self-initiated movements. Thus, this person made a postural adjustment in anticipation of changes and changes in the center of gravity. In hierarchical model of motor control, this type of behavior are taught a part of motor program. So in assessment of central nervous dysfunction that focus on evaluating abnormal movement patterns in muscle tone are consistent with hierarchical model because those problems are assumed to result from loss of higher level control. Similarly, treatment approach that focus on inhibitory spasticity and abnormal movement patterns, facilitatory balance of tone between agonist and antagonist muscle group, and eliciting variety of selective movement patterns are consistent with a hierarchical model. So retraining the reflexive activity of and modifying the movement in a purposeful activity, thus the higher centers are slowly established to adapt for more adaptive movement. So clearly, the neurodevelopmental approach are influenced in this model. And what is the clinical implication of this hierarchical model theory? It says that abnormalities of reflex organization have been used by many clinicians to explain the disorder of the motor control in the patients with neurologic disorder. Sine Bronstrom, a physical therapist who pioneered early stroke rehabilitation to describe disorder movements following a motor cortex lesion. She stated that when the influence of the higher centers is temporarily or permanently interfered with the normal reflexes, it becomes exaggerated and so-called pathological reflexes appear. And Bertha Bobath, an English physical therapist, in her discussion of abnormal posture reflexes activity in children with cerebral palsy, she stated that the release of motor response integrated at lower levels from restraining influence of higher centers, especially that the cortex, leads to abnormal posture reflex activity. One of the limitations of hierarchical theory of motor control is that it cannot explain the dominance behavior in certain stimulus in normal adults. For example, stepping in a pain results an immediate withdrawal of leg. This is an example of reflex with the lowest level of hierarchy dominating motor functions. It is an example of bottom-up control. Thus, one must be cautious about assumptions that all level behaviors are primitive, immature, and non-adaptive, while all higher level behaviors are mature, adaptive, and appropriate. The third motor control theory is a motor program theory. In this theory, the central nervous system is capable of producing movements without sensory inputs, or a movement is possible without sensory feedback from the responding limbs. There is a neural network in the spinal cord referred as the central pattern generators, which is capable of producing rhythmic patterns such as walking, hopping, chewing, swallowing, and flying. So even when isolated from the brain and sensory inputs, so example is the grasshopper. Even when sensory nerve are caught, the nervous system can still generate the output. It means that it can still generate a movement without no sensory input. However, the wing beat was slowed. The advantage of motor program theory is even though there is an impairment in sensory system, let's say tactile system, the patient can still perform a skill that was lost on or has a difficulty. Example is when the patient can still sit because he know how he was sitting before and can rehearse or retrain movement. However, the disadvantage of this motor program theory is all experiments were done in quadruped animals, which are very different from the bipedal humans. And second, there is a main difference of spinal cord organization between animals and humans. Spinal cord of animals can resist powerful compressive forces. Third is the central processing generates maybe decrease in bipedal. Experiment shows that quadrupedals front leg provide thrust while the hind legs just follows. And the limitation of this motor program theory is that the contribution of the sensory input isn't properly explained. Next is the execution of movements differs from the environmental context, which or position and posture change. So this motor programs there did not consider musculoskeletal and respiratory system contribution. An important limitation of motor program theory concept is that a central motor program cannot be considered to be the sole determinant of actions. So there is two identical commands to the elbow flexors, for example, that will produce different movements depending on whether your arm is resting at your side or you are holding your arm out in front of you. So the forces of gravity will act differently on the limb in the two conditions and thus modify the movement. In addition of your muscle fatigue, similar nervous system commands will yield different results. Thus, the motor program does not take into account that the nervous system must deal with both musculoskeletal and environmental variables in achieving movement control. And what is the clinical implication of this motor program theory? Motor program theories of motor control have allowed clinicians to move beyond a reflex explanation for disordered motor control. Explanations for abnormal movement has been expanded to include problems resulting from abnormalities in central pattern generators or in a higher level motor program. In patients whose higher level of motor programming are affected, motor program theories such as the importance of helping relearn the correct rules for action. In addition, intervention should focus on retraining movements important to functional tasks, not just on re-educating specific muscle isolation. And the fourth motor control theory, which is the last motor control theory that I will be discussing, is the system theory. So in this model of motor control, it is based on system or dynamical system. It proposes that the nervous system is organized heterarchically, such that higher centers interact with lower centers but do not control them. It means no subsystems is most important. The nervous system is only one system among many that influence motor behavior. So there is a closed loop and the open loop system works cooperatively of both feedback and feed forward. As we remember on the hierarchical motor control theory, it uses open loop system. So that open loop system sends pre-programmed instructions to an effector that does not use feedback to carry movement. But in this system model, motor control theory, it uses both feedback and feed forward. So from this perspective, motor development is due to changes of multiple systems, not just maturation of the central nervous system. A motor behavior may be described as movement patterns that emerges from the interaction of multiple personal system and performance context to achieve functional goal. Thus, muscle is not designed to work alone. There is synergy of movement occurs, which is emphasized in this system. When there is a central nervous system damage, the person attempts to compensate for the lesion in order to achieve functional goals. Recovery from brain damage is a process of discovering what remains to perform tasks. From a system perspective, the apparent use of abnormal patterns is evidence of attempts to use remaining system to complete tasks. For example, clients with weak shoulder flexion will flex their elbows when trying to raise their arms because that shortens the lever arm and it makes shoulder flexion easier. Thus, muscle weakness is one factor contribution to the abnormal flexor pattern seen in many clients with central nervous system damage. And a group of muscle working together to produce a coordinated movement to work as one goal, the movement pattern emerges from a given task for a given context and are stable and are the preferred means in achieving functional goal, because they require the least amount of energy and most efficient. This system model emphasizes the reciprocity of the person and the environment. There is a pattern required as an attractor, because the center falls into the pattern easily and returns to the pattern even in a perturbed or interrupted. So there is an interaction between in the personal characteristic system of the person and the performance of context or the system of the environment. Movement produced is not only based on sensory input and cortical actions. It is shaped by the interaction between person, environment, and tasks or occupation setup. Example of this system is the PAO frame of reference. We know that occupational performance, such as activities of daily living, work, play, and leisure, emerges from interactions between personal characteristics. So if we say personal characteristics, this is those are the cognitive, sensory, and performance context. If we say performance context, these are the physical, socioeconomic, and cultural changes. In any of the system can affect occupational performance and consequently role performance. Occupational performance affects environment in which it occurs and the person performing. Example, a client with a closed head injury who has just become independent and dressing, free his spouse to spend more time with their children before they leave for school. The objects in the bedroom needs to be accessible to enable that independence. Thus, the occupational performance of dressing affect the social and physical environment. It also affect the person. The performance of dressing gives the client to the opportunity to solve problems and to feel less dependent in his spouse. So the system model may be viewed in more general way as it relates to occupational performance and role performance. This model may have applications to all areas of practice to occupational therapy theory development. Which motor control theory best suits the current theoretical and practical needs for therapists? Which is the most complete theory of motor control? The one that really predicts the nature and cause of movements and is consistent with our current knowledge of brain anatomy and physiology. As you know, no doubt can already see, there is no one theory that has it all. We believe the best theory of motor control is one that combines elements from all the theories presented. A comprehensive or integrated theory recognizes the element of motor control we don't know about and leaves room for the things we do not. So any current theory of motor control is in a sense unfinished, since there must always be room to revise and incorporate new information.